The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
It's a privilege, as always, to speak to a guy who keeps making it up as he goes along, but he is very, very wise, witty and entertaining. Pat Short, I've interviewed him a number of times, from Breakfast Roll to Dumbelievables, but he's just back from Japan, where he attended the 80th anniversary of the Hiroshima bombing, whereby in Hiroshima in August 1945, it actually precipitated the end of World War II. Atom bombs were dropped by America in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, killing 70,000 in Nagasaki, 140,000 in Hiroshima, really the first time it's ever been used. Now, the interesting thing is that Pat is working on a new documentary on a Kildare eyewitness on the destruction of the city called Joseph Cox. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Good morning, Ivan. Lovely to talk to you.
And you know what? I was watching you on TikTok and you were in this back street on, I think it was about the Friday or Saturday before the, and you were tip, 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 tip. You must have got a great buzz out of the Premier County doing the business.
It was incredible. I mean, I've told people about it before. Like, if there's any tip fan out there that would be brutally honest, we did not see ourselves in the All-Ireland this year at all. You know, I mean, I think everyone was thinking there's a great year in them, and then to get to next year maybe might make a mark, all going well. The championship is such a fantastic event that, you know, anything can happen.
So they weren't sure in the enough, top three in Munster, let's be honest about it.
No, like, absolutely.
They subsided. Clare and Waterford were there, but really Limerick and Cork were the two main teams.
100%, and Clare won the All-Ireland last year, so they would have been in for the running as well, one would have thought. But I think Liam Cahill did an amazing job, and his staff and the young players coming up made a huge difference this year and really stood up. So they deserve to be there, and they deserve to win, because the display of hurling was just unbelievable in the second half. It was amazing hurling, amazing to watch.
I know lots of people like yourself, kind of salt of the earth Tipperary people who don't have a lot to cheer about, got a great buzz out of it. Tell me, what's happening in Japan that has you over there?
Well, it's a project, like all these things, Ivan, as you know, making programs, they take a year or so to put together and so on and so forth. And this is a project started by a producer based in Spain now, actually, but he's an Irish man. He's the grandson of Joseph Cox, Patrick, and he's been on to me for the last year about this. They came across an article in the Leinster Leader done around 1960 something, and he knew about his grandfather but didn't realize this story was his grandfather was part he was a captain in the British Army in the Royal Engineer Corps, and they were the first group of soldiers into Hiroshima after the bombing. They were stationed down there somewhere down in that region. And it was his eyewitness account of the devastation and the horrors he saw when they came in to see the people and the devastation of the buildings and the structures and everything. And it was a great interview, actually, in the Leinster Leader. So Patrick decided to do a program following in the footsteps of his grandfather and probably one of the first men and certainly one of the first Irishmen into Hiroshima after the bombing. And I was brought on board as the presenter and to kind of do the VO and do all that.
We're still do the narration of it. Yeah.
Yeah. We're still in the process of making it. So it's not complete yet. We just finished that part of the shoot. Some of the guys are still out there shooting some of the stuff.
So it was on the 6th of August, 1945 that the first bomb dropped, and then the second one in Nagasaki on the 9th of August, 1945. So it was 80 years, and there was a lot of coverage about the Japanese government. And I put it like this, in the context of what happened, you know, taking the nuclear threat that Iran had and the bunker busting bombs and so on, the whole talk today is nuclear bombs being a deterrent. Was there much resonance on that we've actually forgotten what a nuclear bomb can do?
I think that's the key. We have forgotten. I mean, I personally forgotten, and I was heading into this project and I did a bit of research on it. But when I visited the Memorial Museum out there, the Hiroshima Museum, I mean, it was shocking, Ivan, to be honest with you. The queues were just moving along very slowly by every exhibit, and there was people crying and getting very, very upset. And you'd want to be made of steel not to come out of there being completely taken aback by it, you know. So I was lucky enough to meet a woman who's a survivor of the bombing, Kiko Oguru, and she's director of the Hiroshima Interpreters for Peace. So she did a talk in English for all the tourists and people there. And it was really sobering to listen to her talk about the days afterwards and the years afterwards and the leukemia and the horrendous stuff that people are living with today. I mean, she talked about the emotional scars and the hidden emotions, as she called it. You know, she'd find herself, when she went to America to talk on it, she saw a plane, an American plane with the emblem on it and stuff, and she just went into a complete shock. Years, many, many, many years later, and those scars emotionally and everything that they're still living with. And I think it's funny. I remember when I was in school talking about Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I think Christy Moore had a great song with the Moving Hearts at the time, which brought it all back to us. And there was that nuclear movement. Remember many years ago down in Westford?
Sure, yeah. The Carnsore Point was to have a nuclear power station, a civilian one now, mind you, for electricity. Yeah. And there was a huge CND movement and Sellafield and all of that.
Right. And all of that, when I was a young fella growing up, kept the awareness of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the bomb and all that. I think that's gone. And we need to kind of go back. I mean, if you, I was lucky enough to do a one-on-one interview with this lady, and she was 8 years of age when the bomb was dropped. And she was 1.5 miles from the hypocenter when it went off. And she's 88 today. And she just has dedicated her whole life to making people aware of the horrors of nuclear bombing, and that we shouldn't have any more, and we shouldn't have wars in general. I mean, the ambassador of Hiroshima, sorry, the mayor of Hiroshima spoke at the event, and it was incredible. You know, he was making out, you know, he in his own words, he was saying that the United States and Russia still possess 90% of the world's nuclear warheads, and since the war in Ukraine and the chaos in the Middle East that's going on at the moment, we should be more aware of it now than ever. And
speaking of awareness, I just wanted to ask you, what did you pick up in terms of the long-term damage on humans from radiation? The reason I ask is that I attend usually the annual lunch fundraiser for A.D. Roach, and this was the radiation leak from Chernobyl, and the effect it's had genetically on people of kids being born disabled, and the kind of really lasting damage of radiation going into subsequent generations. Did you see any of that, or does it not apply to Hiroshima?
It is in the exhibits. There was a particular story of one young survivor who died quite young, but she became a kind of a test case for leukemia and all the radiation and the effects of it. And her story was documented in the museum, and it was incredibly sad because they were saying that when she went into the hospitals doing tests, the nurses and everyone were just knocked out by her good spirit, and you know how she kept them all entertained, and you know, even though her body was deteriorating, something terrible, but they were talking about generations it lasted for, because those babies born years later and they had the effects from their mothers and fathers, you know. So it was horrific. The Japanese really understand it. I mean, what was incredible was to find out that the first peace the first peace memorial ceremony was the year after the bomb went off. They were conscious right from the start that this was horrific and should never happen again. And they started up literally a year later, which was incredible. And just from that day on, just promoting peace instead of war and conflict.
Okay.
And I think that what was another interesting one, when we were doing our recent working on this stuff, we came across the Godzilla character, you know, and I don't know.
Explain Godzilla to me, because that passed me by.
Yeah, and it was one that...
It was a movie of a monster, was it?
There's nearly one out every year, and they're very big in Japan. And it's a big monster, like a kind of a dinosaur type character. with spiky back and everything else. And I have to say, I was never a fan of it because I always thought it was kind of a Japanese cartoon art and stuff like that. And it came from their culture and it didn't really, I never looked into it. But I was shocked to hear it. The character came about 9 years after the bomb because of the American testing of nuclear bombs in the islands there, Bikini Atoll, isn't it? Excuse my pronunciation of that. But the Japanese were absolutely outraged at this because have we not learned that 9 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, here they are testing again, destroying the lands of the people in that area. And why are we building more bombs? So the Godzilla character was designed then and came out at that time as a protest towards nuclear war. Because when you see that Godzilla character come
I
into
see.
The city,
so like there's a deeper significance to Godzilla than just a sort of character. Yeah.
Just a character. Okay. Yeah. And that I found fascinating and interesting.
Okay. Now, I'm only here because the horse show's on today and I'm filling in and I don't get an opportunity. And to be honest with you, your sense of humour from Killnascully to Get Up the Yard and F You and all this kind of, and when you do women in thing and stand up, I actually love it. And it shows I'm of a certain vintage and I'm a culture too. Right. Of all the work you've done, stand up, Dumbelievables, Killnascully, acting some serious parts, and now moving on to documentary. What are you most proud of? And are you collaborating with your daughter now?
I am. We're writing a new show, and we should be opening in October, early October, and starting a tour around the country. But to go back to your question, I mean, I'm very proud to be working with my daughter at the moment. And what's current is obviously in my head. But I suppose the years of The Unbelievables and working with the late John Kenny was absolutely incredible and fantastic. And we got to do some great stuff and tour all over the world with it, which was fantastic. And I have great memories of working with John. People maybe of your vintage, it's the first thing that they always mention to me, The Unbelievables. And it's something to be very proud of.
And I notice, did the two Johnnies have an event and you were there with your guitar, given it large with Breakfast Roll? Can you make sense of the two Johnnies? Because it's Tipperary as well. And I cannot understand the two. I actually find some of their skits good. Are they the modern Dumbelievables?
I think they're very funny. They're very natural. I love their podcast. Yes. And musically, they're incredibly talented. I mean, they've written some great stuff. But they've touched on the contemporary generation. And they do a really good job. It's fun. It's great fun. It's great. I mean, I was at their gig in that gig when I did a spot in it, but it was an amazing gig. And it was an all day, 25,000 people in the field. And it's called Cans in the Field. And they're all just drinking and having a crack. And they're all cultures. And it's unashamed crack. And it's brilliant. It's fantastic.
So you're kind of unashamed redneck. Would you like if I landed from Mars and I say, explain Pat Short to me, because you don't do a particular kind of cynical send up of politicians, you know, like it's hard to describe your genre, but would redneckery be the nearest you get to it?
I don't think so. No.
All right.
Well, no, I do what I do. Well, listen, you can call me what you want. I don't mind once you're paying on the
phone. No, I meant it as a compliment.
I know you did. I try to reflect everyday ordinary people that in Ireland that we are. And obviously enlarge it then for comic reasons, you know, because that's the craft that I'm in and that's what I do. And I'd like to think that it hits the nail every now and again.
Oh, you do. And Breakfast Roll. Remember that time during the Celtic Tiger where everyone was a builder and a spark and a plumber and a carpenter and they were all stopping in the forecourt to get there? You really hit the national mood at that time. It was fantastic.
It's funny. And would you believe I ended up playing the Breakfast Roll in Tokyo there?
And like me, you've got one great attribute. You're a fair chancer, isn't that it?
Totally.
Well, look, it's an honour to speak to you and we wish you every success. Do you have a website for the new tour?
PatShort.com. Yeah,
okay, PatShort.com. Well, long may you reign and we look forward to seeing this documentary which outlines, after 80 years, the horrors of Hiroshima, the damage that nuclear armaments can do. Pat Short, as always, thank you.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.